the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best air of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today's NFL Wire site, all about the Arizona Cardinals, episode 489. It's our review show. With me is co-host Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And this is the review show. The Cardinals lose 21-16. On the road to the Houston Texans, a game in which they were both exciting offensively and bad offensively, terrible defensively, and then really good defensively. And in the end, a game that, yeah, they couldn't quite pull it off. And that team was very, very broken up about that loss, weren't they?
Yeah, and it's just one of those things that it's unfortunate that, you know, they're basically in, what would you say? Probably week four of like training camp, preseason, basically form with Kyler, and it showed up in a couple big throws that he just missed. And, you know, it's just a rhythm thing. And it's just a situation where they need to figure out where, you know, when this all comes together, because like you said, there were some real, real highs in the game again, but there was also some just stuff that you're like, that can't be something they miss. And then on the flip side, like you said, you had the defense just like look completely lost in the first. I mean, literally just looked like they couldn't stop a runny nose. And then in the second half, they don't give up any points. And you're like, oh. And so the Jekyll and Hyde of this team is interesting because, I mean, would it have been better to have both go cold in one half and both get hot in one half? Could you have rode that to a win more than the offense kind of going... and the ironic thing, and something we'll talk about, is that like some of it was just decision making or maybe overuse of analytics, because they really kind of screwed themselves. And I get it from the perspective of, okay, how long can this defense hold out against what had been a great Texans offense? But at the same time, they answered the call every time, and it, you know, it's just obviously hindsight, so easy to make this call, but
yes,
like,
absolutely,
you just kick one, that early field goal early in the fourth quarter, then we're probably just having a different conversation, right?
Very, very possibly, yes. We want to talk about specifically Kyler. We're going to talk about who we're going to blame. Seth's kind of brought up a bunch of those things. What are we going to blame for this loss? We're going to talk about how close are they to being the team that they want to be this year. And we got more injuries and more adjustments coming. So let's start with the play of Kyler Murray. My goodness, didn't it look like he was going... Well, we both were like, yeah, this is going to be... based on what we'd seen from the Texans pass defense, we expected a bit of a shootout, honestly. We did. We expected a shootout. We expected the Cardinals to be able to pass the ball pretty well and that it would be kind of an electric game. And it started that way with the, you know, technically the second play from scrimmage, but third F because of a penalty. And Kyler throws a bomb to Rondale Moore, bringing up shades of that first conversation Jonathan Gannon had with Rondale Moore in the building about pew, 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 explosive shots. And, you know, it was exactly what we envisioned or what we hoped this offense would do with Rondale Moore, and just an absolute bomb and a dime of a throw into the arms of Rondale Moore for a touchdown. And that really got things started. But in the end, Kyler Murray was 20 of 30. 214 yards, a touchdown, an interception. He rushed for 51, added a touchdown there as well. And it was, it felt like, and I think you would agree, maybe you'll agree, that with what we saw against Atlanta, this was a little bit of a step backward. If you look at the totality of it, right? Actually, if you look at specific moments, because they were in position again to go down the field, only he couldn't pull it off this time. And he, I'm not going to say it was rusty. It's just the timing wasn't there. He had a couple of a stinker of throws and the timing, you could tell that it wasn't quite as crisp as it was against Atlanta.
Well, and that's just what it was. There wasn't the cohesiveness. There wasn't the familiarity, and you know, they, and you got to remember, in the end, the plays in the Atlanta game that won them the game were his legs, and then Trey McBride making a great play on the ball to come back and you know, get himself in a position to make a 30-plus yard catch. And in this game, there were instances where Kyler missed throws. I mean, obviously the easiest one to point out was the fourth down throw to McBride.
There was another throw to McBride that was just an absolute stinker. Like on replay, I thought maybe it gotten tipped because it didn't look like at the beginning, but it just looked like it just wobbled out of his hand and went to the ground. But yeah, it was, and he said it was bad. It was bad footwork. He didn't get clean with that. But yeah, the McBride form, even the throw to Hollywood was just, it was a really great play by Stingley, but. And it's been that case. Hollywood has been the most unlucky receiver. And Kyle Odegaard kind of tweeted, like, Hollywood would have 3,000 yards this year right now at this point if his quarterbacks could hit him when he's open. You know, right. Kyler needed to put more on that ball, let Hollywood get under it. And it was in a place where Stingley was able to make a play on it, just took it away from Hollywood. And Hollywood, frankly, just isn't a physical enough receiver to play defensive back and to break up a play like that.
Not at all. And so you go back and you look at the you know, end of the third, start of the fourth quarter, and you just look at it, you have them getting to their own 43 in three plays, and then you have the really nice play by Dortch. And then you have a 3-yard loss, right, to James Conner. And then Kyler completes a pass to Elijah Higgins that they overrule and say it's incomplete. Okay. They decide to run a quick draw. They get 10 yards, and now it's 4th and 3, and you're thinking, oh, well, they're obviously going to go for it, right? Like, it was obvious. But you go back, and this is obviously the hindsight we're talking about, right? But you go back and you say, all right, this is a 4th and 3 from the 23. There's just under 13 minutes left in the game. And you kick a field goal there, and it's 21-19. Obviously, we have no idea if the game plays out exactly the same or anything like that. But there were a couple instances. Obviously, the first one, they basically get a 3-and-out and then get screwed on what was one of the worst calls I can remember.
Oh, gosh.
And, you know, the old ball don't lie thing happens, and they get, you know, Chris Barnes.
Yeah, so they were fortunate enough that botched play didn't matter. But
right.
What in the world? Like, I, you know what the officials did, and this, I know this is the, this is where, if got people, you're listening, you don't know what we're referring to. It was the punt that was ruled that hit, Starling Thomas?
Yeah.
And it actually hit a Texans player. And Thomas's reaction is what you would expect of someone who knew that he didn't touch the ball, because then the ball's free if he was worried about all that he had touched it, he would be trying to recover it. But in that situation, the ball bouncing free, if he tries to jump on it and land on it and it scoots out at all, then the Texans, who had like five players right there, and the officials, they ruled it touched the Thomas. And as a result, then because it was a turnover, then they could review it. But then they didn't overturn it on review, even though we thought like it looked pretty obvious that it wasn't Thomas.
And obviously you were watching the broadcast as well. I mean, even Gene Steratore was kind of like, I don't know how they came back with this being the, and, you know, and it happens. And like I said, it, like you said, it ended up not mattering. But you think about that, right? So you kick the field goal, you force the punt. There's 10:50 left in the game after that play. If everything, and even if you get the ball to 25 or whatever, and then you go down and you're at the 45. Now, that's a, you know, that's a long field goal, but you have a choice at that point, right? So it's 21-19. You can kick a 60-yard or 61-yard field goal, or there's 7-plus minutes left in the game, and you can make a decision and say, hey, we're going to punt and pin them deep and kind of force them to have to go the length of the field to ice the game. And, again, they make a great play. You know, obviously they go for it. It doesn't work. That's the play that Jess was referring to when Kyler just didn't get his feet right and missed Trey McBride wide open over the middle of the field. That's on Kyler. I mean, there's no question about that. Then they get the ball back, and again, now it's – or then, you know, Houston gets the ball back, and again, they play great defense, and Antonio Hamilton injures himself, intercepting a pass from Tank Dell. Poor guy, just cannot stay healthy. But so now they get the ball back with just under 5 minutes to go, and, you know, now they've got to go – they've got to go 81 yards to win the game. They only had two timeouts left. And it just seemed like, even though they you know, went down the field, it just seemed like it was inevitably going to end in a negative way, because even in that situation, you look at it, they had that incomplete pass where it just looked like Dortch and Murray weren't on the same page. Then they get a delay of game. So instead of 3rd and 7, it's 3rd and 12. They get the pass to Marquise Brown, right? Next play, they get the pass to Dortch, 31 yards. And that kind of sets them up, and you're like, okay. And then they come back and they throw, you know, they get another first down. And then coming out of the 2-minute warning, and this was the most puzzling one to me, they throw a screen to, or like a swing pass to James Conner, and they lose 5 yards. And now it's 2nd and 15. You really can't afford to take a timeout there. And you look at that, from that play until the next play ran, it took them all 35 seconds. And they only got a 7-yard completion to Jeff Swaim. So now it's 3rd and 8. And, you know, we talked about the last two plays. Christian Harris made a great play, a linebacker that deep in coverage. That was a great play by Christian Harris. Sometimes you have to nod your, you know, tip your cap to the defense. And then the last play was just one, you know, he tried to heave it up. They went all out blitz, cover zero. I don't know if it's on Kyler or the receiver to recognize it and run a hot route on that, but nobody did. And he tried to throw it to Marquise Brown, incomplete. But, you know, you look at it, there were two big plays that I thought kind of changed the momentum. And one of them was on Kyler, and we've talked about that. The other one was on Greg Dortch. And Dortch had a really nice game. But on that first 4th down in the 4th quarter, 4th and 3, he runs a 2-yard route and just gets plastered.
And because he's 5'7". And
right. And
like,
and
if you are that small, you cannot expect to fight your way for another yard. No.
And it's just a bad, and people would say, well, why did Kyler throw it? Well, Kyler's in that situation, Kyler's expecting that he's running to the yard, 1 yard past the yard marker. So fourth and three, he's at 4 yards. And you have to remember in the moment, Kyler has no way of knowing if he's at 2 yards or at 4 yards. And so to run a 2 yard route there, that's unfortunate. And we have to, admit that the Texans on those final drives did a really nice job of making sure that Kyler could not beat them with his legs. You look earlier in the game, that's when Kyler Murray got most of his rushing yards, right? But I think he had one 6 yard gain that in the fourth quarter running the ball. And it was just, they were bracketing him and then spying him to make sure, like, hey, we're just not going to let this guy scramble to beat us. And that was kind of the difference in the game. And it really changed because I think everybody knows how explosive athletically he is. But I think the touchdown run really reminded D'Amico Ryans of, like, oh, this guy changes the angles of pursuit, because there were four Houston Texans players there and just none of them took the right angle.
And well, so yeah, like, and when you're watching the play in real time, you thought that
Kyler thought it was dead in the water.
Right. And then he's in the end zone and you're like, wait, what happened?
and so from that, you look at it, you just look at it and you go, okay, that's where the things have to come in. They need to be able to make plays in the receiving game. A lot of it comes down to, you mentioned it, without Michael Wilson, they only have Trey McBride as their physical kind of receiving option. I don't think we realized how much they missed the physicality of Wilson until that game.
Right, Well, because it wasn't just you lose. Well, and it's the fact it wasn't that they didn't just have Wilson. They didn't have Zach Pascal either, because all four of their receivers are 5'9 and smaller.
Well, and it's not even just the 5'9, but only Rondale Moore is really a guy that runs with any type of
authority. That's absolutely.
And so, like you said, you run that route with Dortch, and it's just one of those situations that you're like, dude, that's on you. You have to have better, field awareness, spatial awareness, where you're at. The throw to McBride, that's on Kyler. Like, Kyler's got to make a better throw. The interception, like you said, Kyler needs to put that out more. Let Marquise run, similar to what he did with Rondell. And I just think he didn't. I think a lot of that is the timing that we're talking about of, like, oh, I needed to throw that 3 yards, 4 yards further down the field and not let it, let it float as much as it did. And that's what I'm saying. It's just time. It's not anything I'm worried about. Like, if this was the Eagles game or obviously the Seahawks game and it's a similar situation, he's making these errors, it's like, okay, then this is something that we can have a discussion about of, like, does he have the feel back or is it, does he not have it? But, like, the one thing we were curious about coming back was his explosiveness, and that's still.
And so there's one concern about Kyler that, and I think what it is, it's partly just a bad habit because of his ability to throw off platform. What we don't see enough from him enough, as I said, enough of him enough, is just, I think in a situation in particular, like the throw to Hollywood, he doesn't do a traditional base for his throws. Like, he doesn't do a traditional step into his throws. In fact, if you see him in practice, what you see him doing is off balance throws. Like, he's throwing off platform, he's throwing while his balance is to the side. It's very baseball like what he does. And I was just having a conversation with my son about this. Is like, the one thing you want, you're going to wonder if he's going to have to do that the traditional square up, step into the throw mechanics with the hips, shoulders, and arm. as he gets older and his arm strength diminishes, he's going to have to do that more. And I think that's the one bad habit he could do a little bit better, is to, rather than rely on his ability to throw from any platform and angle and balance, is on those particular throws. And a lot of times, even on the deep throws, is he's getting rid of it real quick, and it's almost all arm, and it's not, it doesn't even look like a traditional wind up and throw step, at least stepping into throw. It's all upper body. And I think that's the one thing that he kind of skips every once in a while, then I think on a few throws would do him good. And I think on the Hollywood throw in particular would have been beneficial for him to get that drive with his leg stepping into that throw and putting the ball where it needed to go.
Yeah, and the one thing you look at is you understand that, I think, and you, like you said, it's something to monitor. It's, you know, is it something he can grow into? You know, was it something that he was working on before the injury? And so, like, is it just a confidence thing and having that strong base and throwing as he goes, or is it something he can't do? And so, you know, it'll be something to monitor. But I think, you know, when you look at it through two games, you have to look at it as trending up. I mean, he still had a top 12 QBR once again. He still put them in a position to win the game again. And you know, like we said, I think, and obviously the easily saying, like, you know, looking at this through hindsight, you had the opportunities to kick those field goals. I do understand the analytics, but I think that sometimes people just overthink the way the flow of the game is, because that's the whole thing with analytics, right? Is it takes out the emotion or the ebb and flow of the game and just looks at things from the numbers and says, hey, this is, if you go for it here, you have this chance of winning if you don't. But you had to have looked at it and gone, damn, I mean, defensively, we held them without a score in the third quarter. Like, you know, let's kick a field goal and go have a chance to get a stop and then, you know, and then win a game. And instead, they just were chasing those 7 points. And quite frankly, they kept chasing the same points that they missed when they didn't get the 2-point conversion.
Let's pin that. Let's come back and let's talk specifically about that. We want to talk about who's to blame. What do we blame most about that game? So coming next on the Rise of Zero podcast, especially for Cardinals Talk on the Web, let's talk about that. Where do we want to put the most blame? Was it the defense in the first half? Was it the offense overall? Was it Kyler's, you know, specific plays? Was it the game decisions? That's coming next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. Where do we place the blame for this loss? I mean, we're not, like, I don't like playing this game most of the time, but I do see this worth in a game like this where you had a lot of different choices. And I'm going to be with Seth here. It's like, I thought if there's one thing that we could point at, And you know, when you're down 5, I get going for 2. I do, in a sense, because if you do, then okay, then you put yourself into. But like, if you're early in the third quarter, I often question why you want to chase points, because you're going to have multiple opportunities later. When I don't know, I get it, but I don't.
I'm with you. Like, it's just so difficult to chase points.
Gungus, your guy over in Revenge of the Birds, a fan that we both respect a whole lot, and he says, you know, when you go for 2 to set it up for a field goal and miss, then the next time you've got to kick the field goal, right?
Right, right.
You've got to kick the field goal, and I think if anything else, that first decision, it's really short-sighted. And I get it to an extent, but if this was not it wasn't a 57-yarder. We're talking a 41-yard kick. We're talking a 41-yard quick kick, which is, generally speaking, a gimme.
Yeah, and
Prater was booting the ball like crap, was crazy good. He just hammered that 57-yarder, the 55-yarder, whatever it was. But, you know, in that situation, take the field goal, take the points, You know, you get within two, and then you're within a field goal of taking the lead. It's not as efficient, but look at and you look at a couple other teams that are exactly the opposite. You've got Pittsburgh and you've got Denver, who have been doing that all year.
Right.
And so, you know, you get into field goal range, you're like, okay, we'll kick a field goal. We're just going to keep this close, and then we'll try to make plays late, rather than trying to get everything early. And I get it, because if you convert and then you score a touchdown and you take a lead, you then can change your game plan a little bit, because then you're playing from ahead. But it feels like you don't trust the defense to get you the ball back, especially as good as they're playing, because, you know, yes, the defense gave them a huge hole. They gave up 21 points, 333 yards. Singletary had over 8 yards at halftime. Stroud had 259 yards and two scores at halftime. The first half defense was, oh my gosh, the Texans were absolutely shredding that Cardinals defense in the first half. So I guess you can also blame them for getting too far behind. So yes, they got the 7-0 lead, but then they just kind of eroded, which is weird, because even the defense was, if you look at it, it's not like they were killing it, but it was basically towards the last half of the second quarter, the offense kind of sputtered, because they took the 7-0 lead, then it had a 10-7 lead, then it was 14-10, and then it was 21-10, that's where kind of things fell apart, is that 40-yard touchdown pass over Marco Wilson, and that's when things kind of felt like, oh, crap. But then the defense only gave up 86 yards in the second half. They held the Texans scoreless. And when you hold a team scoreless in a second half and you're down 11, you should win the game, right? Yeah, like, so.
Well, especially when you have a scoring drive and then three drives that get you within field goal range. Like, that's again, to your point, like, when you start chasing points early, it's fine, but you have to make the decisions in the correct order. And I feel like that was probably, and I know you just, you know, spelled it out in a much more eloquent fashion, but that was probably one of the bigger mistakes of the game, because instead of just putting yourself in a need to kick a field goal, and let's be honest, that was probably the overall difference in the game, right? Like,
yeah.
Instead of just needing to kick a field goal, like last week, you're now chasing a touchdown. So your everything about your play calling changes.
Absolutely. Imagine if they were down 2 points and they were, it wouldn't have felt like that scramble at the end. And that's
right.
Now, granted, had they gotten within two, we don't know how the rest plays out, right? Or even if they had just kicked the first extra point. And that's like, I understand the mathematics of it, but with 30 minutes left in the game, or 20 minutes left in the game, or 25 minutes left in the game, it feels like that extra point, like, do you think you're only going to get a field goal after that? Because ultimately, don't you want to stop them and score more points?
Right. Yeah, they played it like there was no chance that they were going to get a stop. And that's what the disappointing portion of it was, that they put themselves in a position where they had a chance and they kind of blew it.
And honestly, they've been bad at 2-point conversions this year. They've been bad.
Yeah, and you would think with Kyler back, it would have been a little bit easier, but yeah, they, like you said, it was probably just a bad sequence of events overall.
And so if I'm going to place blame, that's the one thing in terms of coaching. The coaching decisions made it harder, because they were in scoring position. Now there were like, yes, that fourth down throw was bad. That should have been a play. And we've heard like years ago, Bruce Arians, when it was a questionable decision, but the play was there, he doubled down. No, it was the right decision. The players needed to execute. And so, at some level, yes. Okay. At some level, that does make sense, because if the play was there, Cliff said that sometimes too, we liked the look, that was the right play. It just didn't happen. It wasn't executed right. But if you're in a situation, you have to execute. You've got to execute that. So it's kind of the whole thing. And should you give up 333 yards in the first half?
No.
But you also shouldn't only score 6 points in a second half with your starting quarterback back. But especially when the defense takes the ball away from C.J. Stroud three times. I mean, he'd only had two interceptions all year. And they pick him off three times. Like, that's an extremely great performance by a defense, especially in the second half, when you're giving your offense a chance, and when your defense is doing that, and you've got your starting quarterback, that's where that should happen. And it just didn't, and that was the bummer.
Yeah, and it's just interesting to see that they're in the position now, and it's, you know, I really just do think it's about time and cohesiveness, and as that continues to grow, that they'll be in a better spot, and you know, they'll be able to pull out some wins, because, you know, like we said, you're probably looking at 2-3 being the goal, and now, you know, 6 games left, and that I think 2-3 is still a realistic goal.
Yeah. And oh my gosh, you know, I didn't remember this. I was looking at the box score. I'm like, I don't remember when B.J. Ojulari got a sack.
Was it a full sack or a half a sack?
It was a full sack. He has a full sack. Oh, okay. That was for a 1 yard loss.
Yeah, I missed it too. Remember. It might have been when Stroud started to scramble. That's the only thing I can think.
Maybe.
So, but yeah, I mean, I thought overall they, you know.
And what the heck? Cashman, their linebacker, the game he had?
Yeah.
19 tackles and a sack? Whoa. So looking at that, how much, if we want to spread out, you know, this is a radio show type thing rather than, you know, our podcast. We don't normally go like this. If you were to assign percentage of blame, the defense, the offense, Kyler, and then the fourth down decisions. How do you divvy up the percentages?
I would I think it would be 50% of the blame goes to the fourth down decisions.
I would too.
25% goes to Kyler and 25% goes to the defense, because I think they both had a bad half, but those decisions led to the issues that Kyler had being more pronounced, I guess you could say.
Yeah, that makes sense. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sierra podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. How close are the Cardinals to being the team that they want to be? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sierra. We're back on the Rise of Seared podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. How close are the Cardinals? This is a Cardinals team that with Kyler back, they won a game down the stretch on a game-ending drive, were in position to win, and after that game, the players were not good. You know, Kyler sat at his locker room forever, just very dejected about how they had plays to make that they just didn't do, that the defense balled out in the second half and they couldn't convert. This is a team, you know, and Josh Woods, he made the comments like, I've been on some bad teams. This is not a bad team. This team is different. And so the question comes to be, how close are they? So on paper, 2-9, they have the second pick in the draft right now. They're the second worst team in the NFL. And they don't have a good defense, and they don't have a good offense, like, statistically. But if you watch this team play, you can see they're not terrible. how close are they to being the team that we think they can be? This feels like this could be like the way that they're structured. This is a win ugly kind of team, isn't it?
Yeah, right now it definitely is. They just lack the talent to do anything else. But they're so well coached, especially on defense, and they're prepared. And those are things that you can't really count on or, you know, discount. And so that's the biggest thing I'm kind of looking at right now is you have to look at it and say that they're in positions. And so now it's about, can they overcome the lack of talent? And it's, I don't know how you feel, but if you looked at this just on paper, that you would think that the Texans were the better team, right? Like offensively, defensively, they just have more dudes. And so for the Cardinals to be in a position to win a game or win the game, it shows that they're close. And, you know, the guy at Turf Show Times was asking about that overall. And I said,
by the way, is the Rams blog for SB Nation. Oh, yeah. And so they were doing their Behind Enemy Lines or Five Good Questions preview for the Rams game. So this is where this comes up from.
Yeah, yeah. And I said, I would love to get your take on it. You look at a lot of things. I think they're ninth overall in sacks on the team or in the NFL. Ninth. They're 30th in pressure rate.
What?
And yeah, and then they're dead last in quarterback hits, like dead last in quarterback hit percentage. And so they scheme extremely well to get sacks, but they don't have a singular guy that you're just like, hey, this is a guy that can cause havoc over and over and over again, rushing the passer, right? And then you look at it, and you look at that game, and you say, if you're talking about like a lot of what happened on Sunday, you're frustrated, and you should be. I mean, that's a winnable game in a season where you lack the talent that you'll be in a lot of winnable games. Yeah, and so you look at it, they just don't have a pass rusher, right, that strikes fear in creating pressures or creating havoc consistently. They do a great job of scheming up things though. And then you look at their performance on Sunday and you look at the overall aspect of it and you go, man, can you imagine? And obviously I still think it was the right decision, but can you imagine Will Anderson on that defense?
Did you hear, like, I know the interest is complete side note. Pro Football Talk had a quick interview with him and I know he's saying that he would say something different, but being there in Houston, he said, "I'm glad I'm here and not there," referring to Arizona. But
I don't doubt it at the time. I mean, the thing is with D'Amico Ryans is he's a very appreciated coach, and so the culture he's building and the unknown of what's happening in Arizona, before Gannon got there. I mean, it kind of makes sense, but I think it's changing, especially the perception. Cause I mean, Gannon has the respect of a lot of people and the way that his team has played. Now you're only going to get that respect for so long, but it feels similar to what you're seeing in Detroit with Dan Campbell, right?
Yes.
Like that they're building the culture into the right thing. And that's, I think, the biggest thing is you look at this and you go, there's so much time left in the season. I know 7 weeks doesn't see, or 6 weeks doesn't seem like a lot, but there's so much time left in the season. And when you look at the mock drafts and things like that, like one of the most positive things I can say is that the Arizona Cardinals are in such a good spot for what they need heading into the season. And I just think that is how you have to look at the situation. It's unfortunate that they're missing out on a win like they should have had last week, right? But if you just look at the outcome, you're going to miss the process. And I think the process is telling us that if they get a guy, you know, say in this instance, you mentioned it earlier, they're drafting number two. Say they're sitting at number two and the Giants or the Texans or the Falcons, not the Texans, sorry, the Titans or the Falcons, or maybe even the Commanders, right? Or all need to get in front of the Patriots who are sitting at three. Or the Patriots are even like, hey, we'll give you, you know, 3 and 36 or whatever it is. You can make that move and move down and you can get, you know, yeah, maybe you miss out on Marvin Harrison Jr. and he looks like he's going to be phenomenal. But you can get, you know, a guy that helps out along the offensive line. And then you look at that pick later in the draft right now, and there's just so many enticing guys that could fit in on this defense where realistically, I mean, if you look at this defense outside of the safeties and pre-injury this week, of course, Kaiser White, what guy are you looking at going, oh, you know, they don't need to worry about replacing him or finding somebody better than him? No, literally every position. You're like, oh,
you look at everyone, you're like, he's nice, but yeah. you could definitely do better. Like everyone in their front seven, except for White, you're like, you could do better.
Yeah, and so that's how you have to look at this. Like, it sucks. Trust me. Jess and I have been fans forever.
We've
Jess has been covering the team for over a decade now. I've been in for covering them for about a decade. It's much more fun when we're having conversations about competing for playoff positioning and things of that nature. But the reality is right now that they just lack the talent. And so if the process or you're lamenting things like, oh, they should have won that game, but then you can look at it and go, man, if they just had a guy at this position or a guy at this position, that probably changes the outcome of the game. And that to me is why I'm like, I hate it. I hate that they lost. I hate all of that. But at the same time, I'm going, all right, you know, maybe having the second or third pick or, you know, the second pick isn't the worst thing in the world because you kind of control the draft. Like,
yeah,
you're able to manipulate
the draft. Like, even if you're dead set on Marvin Harrison Jr., okay, you have the number two pick, you can do what Austin Ford did last year. Trade back, trade up. If that's right. Who you really want, and apparently they really wanted Paris and future pick. So they... I'm sure Will Anderson was on their radar, but if given the choice between Anderson and normal picks or Paris Johnson and many picks, they right. were like Johnson they felt that Johnson is a good enough like cornerstone tackle that you're like, yeah, he's worth that. He's worth that still.
And so that's the way you have to look at it. And, you know, I think right now this is, it's just one of the situations where I think that it's unfortunate, but you also have to, being patient is probably the wrong word, but you have to understand where you're at in the process and understand that you're not close to being at the end result. Because if this is the end result, then yes, this is obviously completely, you know, useless and a waste of time and blah, blah, blah. But I think with how close they seem to be that you have to be excited about, like, hey, once they get some more high-level NFL talent, and that's, you know, again, I hate bringing this up almost every week, but that's the other reason that Jess and I are just like, unless it's just so bad with Kyler, you can't move on because it just, whether it's the draft pick at two or one or three or whatever, or the free agency money, like you're really cutting your nose off to spite your face at that point. Cause you're saying like, okay, you know, we lack all this talent, but we have to get a new quarterback. Okay. Well, so your best trade ship, your, number two pick is gone because you can't trade that pick away and then just go pick somebody, right? Like we've seen how that works. And then obviously I would assume you're not keeping Kyler on the roster. So now you're saying goodbye. You're saying goodbye to $40 million in free agency money. So like all of a sudden you're like, okay, well, we're going to sacrifice the talent again for one more year to get this quarterback to have in house for a year where, okay, maybe instead of winning three games, now we win four games. And then in 2025, we can compete. I just don't see how a fan base, a coaching staff, I don't see how an organization can sell that. You know what I'm saying?
It doesn't work very well. Absolutely. Coming next on the Rise of Zero podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. There's more injuries to two more defensive starters. How are the Cardinals going to handle that moving forward? That's coming next on Rise of Zero. We're back on the Rise of Zero podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. Cardinals suffered two big starter injuries in the third. At least it looks like we'll see about Antonio Hamilton. Three guys left the game. Antonio Hamilton did something with his groin on the interception, which was a great play, but the way he came off the field, you're like, he's probably not playing next week. Kaiser White left the game. It was first reported as an elbow and a shoulder. Turns out he tore his biceps. He's done for the year. And then Lucky Fotu left with a hand injury. Turns out to be a broken bone in his hand. And despite an initial report from Ian Rappaport saying that he could get surgery and might not miss any time, the Cardinals put him on IR with White today, reporting Tuesday. So he's done until, at best, he can play in the final two games. So that makes now three defensive linemen, two of them who were starters to start the season, and a third who was starter in caliber and Carlos Watkins, that are on injured reserve. That is the third torn biceps that we've dealt with, that, you know, LJ Collier, Carlos Watkins, and now Kaiser White. What, you know, at least at linebacker, having Chris Barnes, I think he's not at the same level as White, but I think you feel better about that situation than the defensive line. It looks like I thought maybe they would, but how they changed it on Sunday is that Woods, Josh Woods, became the green dot guy, had the signal caller, and they brought in Barnes to play the Woods role. We'll see if that is reversed this week, if they bring in Barnes to play the mic and then Woods plays the what his normal role would be. That defensive line keeps taking hits, and they keep adding guys, and they get a little production, and it's really unfortunate because Fotu is having the best year of his career. Like, he was being impactful this year for the first time in his career. With his first 3 years, it looked like he was, you know, and I will say, Lucky Fotu was one of my favorite picks in that draft because of the potential that he had, and he just never did much in the Cardinals defense for the last 3 years. And this year, playing basically a traditional nose tackle and building the role a little bit like that. You know, he had 2.5 sacks. He's been impactful. He's been healthy. And now he's out for 4 weeks. Can they really afford to take any more hits on that D-line?
Right. And that's been the crazy thing. And goes back to my point of the process is just, it's fine because, you know, Fotu was a starter, don't get me wrong, but he was the least utilized starter when everybody was healthy, which was two games. So, I mean, who knows how it would have played out over the season. But he was going to be the least utilized starter. And now, you know, he was playing out of necessity, you know, 40 to 50% of the snaps. And so this is just a situation where I just truly, truly it just seems like we can't get a break in this situation. and it's funny because, you know, I don't think when you look at it, you and I are like and are like, oh, this, you know, if these guys are healthy, they're a, you know, they're a 5 and you know, they're a 5-6 team. No, I don't think that's what we're saying. I think what we're saying is that you're just able to compete better.
Yeah, they just, they'll have a less bad defense. Like, they've done okay, and then there's some metrics they do okay. And then there's others, like, you're like, ew. Like, they give up the second highest opponent passer rating in the NFL entering last week at 101. That, you know, at a passer rating against of 101 context, and they had a historically bad one back in 2018, it was like 109. But 101, this basically, on average, every quarterback is a Pro Bowl All-Pro against you in right. terms of passer rating. As opposed to back in 2018 or 2019, 2020, I don't remember which year it was, and they were giving up like a 109. That's like opposing quarterbacks were Hall of Famers against you for an entire year.
Right, and that's, you know, what makes it difficult. And, you know, it's just a situation that it just seems untenable, and it always has been. I mean, we knew that. And like I said, the big thing was that you just don't have the talent anyways, and now you're losing what is probably, you know, one of your more talented players. And so it just makes the whole situation a little more difficult to deal with and having to work through, because it's just not something that you can overcome, especially this late in the season, right?
Yeah, because what you definitely need is more Roy Lopez and Ben Stille to fill the middle of the defensive line, right?
Right.
I mean, Roy Lopez he's not bad, but Ben Stille is a guy. And Jonathan Ledbetter still got the shoulder injury. We'll see if he can come back this week. But they're having to go deep into that defensive line room. That's now, you know, two of their three opening day starters are on injured reserve. And then their best backup in Carlos Watkins is now on injured reserve to go with Fotu. They've missed basically, you know, Ledbetter's missed games. You also had Kevin Strong. I think he missed a game on top of the games that you already missed. And so now you're down to, like, defensive linemen 4-9, like, in terms of the depth chart. And it's just, ooh. At least, Chris Barnes immediately came in and made a big play. And Chris Barnes was one of those really underrated signings. He's not dynamic. Like, I will say this. Kaiser White is a tone setter. He is physical. He's a dog on the field. Like, when he gets in the mix, he's trying to inflict pain and take the ball away. I think he leads the teams in tackles for losses, which is good. That's impressive from that Mike linebacker position. He's making plays. He's a defensive captain, and so we're going to see if they can continue to compete at least defensively, while hopefully the offense can pick up. And I think with that, I think we can wrap up this edition of the show. The rest of the week is a little bit up, since it is the holiday week. It's a little bit up in the air. We don't know whether Seth and I are going to do, we'll try to do a preview show for the Rams game, and I'll try to get Cam DeSilva from Rams Wire as well sometime this week. But if not, you know, at minimum, we'll talk about the Rams next week after the game in next week. So maybe a show or two coming up the rest of the week. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Rue. This is the Rise Up Secret Podcast. Of course, thanks for listening as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Secret Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red. Whoa!